This is BSA by Design, a podcast about transforming healthcare, educational, and research facilities through expert design and insight. I'm your host, Brian Moore. In this episode, we're going to explore designing spaces for women, children, labor, and delivery. My guests in this episode are Jane Everett, Winnie St. John, and Christy Adams. Jane Everett is a principal at BSA, an architect with several licenses and certifications, including AIA and ACA, and is Lean Six Sigma Yellow Belt certified. Jane has been with BSA for over 25 years and graduated from Arizona State University with a Master of Architecture in 1999 and has a BBA in Economics from St. Norbert College. She is also the Indianapolis Studio Director and outside of BSA is a mother of three. Christy Adams is the Director of Planning and is EDAC certified. Christy graduated from the University of North Carolina at Greensboro with a BSN in Interior Design and earned her Master's of Architecture from NC State. Christy leads our national planning team and is based out of North Carolina, and she is also a mother of three. Finally, Wendy St. John is a senior healthcare operations planner and has been with BSA for 4 years. She graduated with a BSN from Indiana University and has certification in trauma nursing. Prior to joining BSA, Wendy was a registered nurse with Eskenazi Health for almost 25 years, working as a bedside nurse in the emergency department and then transitioned to the administrative side of healthcare and trauma services. She held several different roles in trauma services, including injury prevention coordinator, performance improvement coordinator, and trauma program manager. Since joining BSA, Wendy has achieved her EDAC certification, became a member of the NIHD, and participated in the HCD Clinical Abstract Review Committee. She has also had the opportunity to present with her colleagues at HFSE, HCD, and the PDC Summit. Wendy is also a mother of three.
Christy, Jane, Wendy, welcome back to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. It's exciting.
Well, I'm glad that you could all join me to talk about how designing spaces in healthcare specific to women, children, and labor and delivery. Now, as you all know, my wife and I have five children, and I said this in the intro, but each of you has three. That's a lot of kids between the four of us. So I can honestly say I'm really intrigued about why these spaces are laid out the way they are. And let's just kind of start right there. How has the approach to designing these spaces changed over the past decade or so?
I think what we've seen over the past decade is just an increased awareness that the space that we deliver our babies in actually affects that entire experience. It's fun when you're working on these type of environments to unpack everybody's birth experiences. And we all have different takeaways. And so understanding that, and then understanding actually that there's evidence that supports the environmental impacts on health outcomes and patient satisfaction, staff efficiency, and allowing each patient to have a say in what that looks like for them.
And I think today there's much more recognition in the fact that these spaces aren't just for the patient, that the families are also much more involved. I remember when my mom, I'm one of six, and my dad was not allowed in the delivery room for the first four. But he did see the other two. So it's a very different, you know, experience for my parents. But I think there's just that recognition that there's more people involved, perhaps, in the whole delivery. But also, everyone's experience is so different. And so there needs to be and is a little bit more flexibility in those units and what they're providing for both the patient and the family, as well as the staff who need to use the space and provide the best care they can.
I think, Jane, too, with that transition, there's more flexibility and participant from moms, too, as to what their birth plans are. And new technology or new care that has come out, you know, the patients are making some of those decisions with their care provider prior to delivery, and trying to follow a birth plan is another thing that I think has been influencing the care over the last couple decades.
Are there any other outdated practices that we're moving away from?
I think one that we've come across recently is the nursery itself. So the baby moving, being taken directly into the nursery, and they stay in the nursery for the most part. Nowadays, it's more baby stays with mom. Mm-hmm. And there's also the issue of security around that as well. So even many owners don't want like the windows in the nursery just from a security standpoint. I used to love going to the hospital and then we'd go to the nursery and see all the cute little babies in there. And you can't do that anymore because there's more of a security risk with that. Mm-hmm. They don't want strangers looking at the newborns. So they do stay a lot more with moms and the nurseries are provided just for the care that's needed. But it's more that cohabitation, I guess, of mom and baby that we didn't used to see in the past.
I think we're also seeing a difference in the laboring process. Moms aren't just hanging out in the bed and walking the halls, holding on to the handrails. They're doing different things. They want to labor in the shower. They want to labor in a tub. And those are, you know, some clients will incorporate those into their environments and some make other choices. But understanding that there are different expectations now for the way that labor actually takes place. And even after the baby's born, I remember my kids were born and my husband did not stay with me. He was always directed, go with the baby wherever they go. And so understanding that looks different for everybody and that we need to design the spaces to enable that.
Yeah, it kind of goes back to that birth plan that Wendy was talking about earlier, right? Then along those same lines, are there cultural considerations that are in these modern maternal care environments that, what are some of those?
Well, I do think it's important, Brian, to understand the community that you're serving. The facility that I worked at had a really active patient and family advisory group, and they went back to them and said, you know, what should this look like for you in the labor process? And they were able to inform some of the design. The interiors really were heavily informed by this advisory council that for artwork and for paint colors and things like that, that felt home to them. Right. So I think that's important to understand who you're serving and then who's going to come in the room too.
Right.
Understanding that it's not just one person anymore. Those partners or spouses or mom coming in with mom and aunt or what have you, understanding the cultural aspects of that as well.
We also have many groups that don't necessarily speak English. And so there's that accommodation of whether it be signage that's in two different languages or having interpreters available, even the electronic interpreters and things like that. So there are a variety of different groups and it's not always just one language. There's a variety of languages. So there's just that accommodation and being able to communicate across the board. So there isn't any confusion with those groups and just being sensitive to the fact that we can't expect that everyone coming in is going to be speaking English, like is the dominant language.
I like to think about the modesty and privacy considerations for each of the patients. In some cultures, having that privacy and lack of direct visibility into the room, into the bed is really important. So laying out the room and understanding the bed placement relative to the door and the proximity of those, how you locate different elements in the space to give the patient a little bit more privacy and dignity and make sure that they aren't compromised when the door's open.
Along those lines, privacy is definitely important, but it also conflicts sometimes with infection prevention. A lot of hospitals are going away from using the cubicle curtains that we've seen in the past just from an infection and cleaning standpoint, but we're also providing more portable screens so that they can be cleaned or put away and it's not something that's out there at each patient. So it can kind of help in the infection prevention arena as well for the facility.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the evidence-based design principles. What research findings have shaped our approach to these specialized environments?
When we start a project, it's fantastic that we have a director of research that we can talk to and bounce ideas off of or ask questions. And recently on a project, she forwarded quite a bit of information to me, and it's focused on noise control and environmental comfort, making sure the workplaces are efficient and there's safety considerations put in place, but also looking at the birth experience and the movement around inside the room and around the patient bed so that there's flexibility and free movement and that we can accommodate alternative birth experiences. Jane, I think you talked about infection control earlier, and that's become a really big conversation in this arena as well.
Yes, definitely. Infection control as well as safety and security for both mom and baby in those units that has just changed significantly over the years, as well as with technology that we have and integrating different security systems throughout maternity units. Patient experience is one of the main factors that all of our clients look at. And so for mom and baby coming into this experience and at some point being separated is not always the best that's going to happen at some point. But a lot of facilities are trying to keep mom and baby together as much as possible, regardless of medical need. Now, whether the baby needs to go to the NICU or mom needs additional intervention, whatever the case might be, but bringing them into the same facility and keeping them as close as possible just is a much more comfortable experience, a safer experience, and more pleasant for everyone involved, staff included, families included, just a much healthier and a much more comfortable experience.
And I think, Christy, what you mentioned earlier, thinking about not the typical birthing experience that we think of that happened many years ago, some of these birthing moms don't spend all their time in the room. So thinking about the unit as a whole for a patient experience as well, and access to daylight and some of the other things that we can do with interiors to make that experience still a pleasant one as they're going through their birthing process. Sometimes labor is really quick, and sometimes people are there for a couple days as they're laboring. So we can't think about a person just being in that room for a couple hours. They have long-term stays and some cases.
Yeah, I got to add, this is the only thing I can add to this conversation along those lines. I think it was our fourth. My wife had contractions. She's a teacher, so she was having it at school, drove herself to the hospital. I met her there. And they gave her something that slowed her cadence down, you know, or whatever. I'm not a doctor, obviously. And there was a DVD player in the room. And what we thought was going to be just a few hours, and now we're pros at this, right? We've had three kids prior to this. We sat and we were watching movies for like 5, 6, 7 hours. People were coming in out of the room. But it was nice having daylight. We had a window so that you just didn't feel like you were in this box. There were other things to kind of help us pass the time, Wendy.
It's interesting what you just said, though, because you're talking about the importance of window and that laboring environment. It's not required by our guidelines that have been adopted across the country, but it is something we try very hard to make sure we provide a really nice window in those laboring rooms, because you can be there for so long and it is high stress.
Yeah. And I at the time, actually, this child's birthday is next week. So he's turning 14. And I can remember just getting up, and it was, you know, fall had kind of set in a little bit, and it was nice to go over to the window. My wife would get up to and just like stare outside or have a conversation over on the little couch that was by the window.
I was add something back to your original question of the evidence-based design. We've grown and learned so much from how nature really affects how we heal and things like that. So especially in this environment where a window isn't necessarily required, to me, it's one of the most important things. I can't imagine a patient room without a window, regardless of the type of patient room. It's so important to be able to see the sunlight or see that it's raining or see the trees outside. And it just really helps your overall mood and emotion and gets you through whatever the case might be that you're experiencing.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I know we've been talking a lot here about the patient and family experience, but how do you find balance in these spaces between the clinical efficiency that you need and that patient and family experience?
Well, I think what is really important is for the clinician to have some muscle memory within their work, meaning same-handed rooms and the rooms set up the same way. the equipment all in the same place, because when an emergency does occur, that muscle memory is really helpful for the clinicians to be able to act quickly, understanding that. And so they can walk into every single room and know where things are if we stock them or design them the same way. I think that helps clinicians with efficiency. The other thing is right-sizing these rooms. Not only the number of family members that might come in during the birth, but thinking about the number of clinicians. And if something changes that isn't a normal birth plan for a patient, then we add even more clinicians. There might be clinicians that are focused on mom, the nurses, and the physicians, but then that come in for baby as well, which come in with extra equipment. So thinking about right-sizing that room, anything and everything that can happen in a delivery room, because we all know that labor and delivery can be a rainbow and lollipops, and it's a beautiful experience. But if something goes wrong, we need to be able to act quickly and act safely to help those patients. I think the other thing is my firstborn, I was in labor for over 24 hours, and I obviously had not been through it, so wasn't really sure what to expect, no matter how many classes you go to or books you read or what have you. But there's a little bit of loss of control because your body takes over control. So I think the other thing is allowing, you know, having those conversations about the birth plan, but then in the design process, allowing that patient to have some kind of control. So control over lighting, control over the thermostat. That's a big thing. It's allowing the patients to have some kind of control, because the laboring process could be out of their control at one point.
And I think along those lines, especially with the room itself, laying out that space so that everyone has their area, so they know they feel included to begin with, and the patient, the families, they're all included in the rooms, but they know they have an area to retreat to if needed. They know where the family zone is, and the family is not necessarily in the way where the clinicians need to be working, and the clinicians have their space to do what they need to do, to have the equipment that they need there to take care of mom and or baby, and they're all designated in that space, but nobody feels like they're in the way or left out, because there's a space incorporated in the room for everyone that needs to be involved.
What I like to do is start the approach from the parking lot and think through the whole path, because that point of entry into the parking lot and into the building starts the experience. And if that is not thought out and designed well, then the rest of the experience is compromised, right? So I look at clear, simple circulation for the staff entries as well as those patient family entries. You need to be able to see if you drop somebody off where you're parking and how you get back to that person, and then how you move through the space. Also like to think about what's most important, right, for the clinician and for the patient. And it's staying close together. So making sure that when possible, you distribute supplies and you distribute the clinical and the staff spaces so that they are closer to and belong closer to where the point of care is given at the bedside.
And that's a great point about the patient experience. Whether it's your first or your sixth kid, I still think it's a little bit stressful coming in. And so wayfinding on the campus, not just to the unit, but on the campus is important too. And I think what organizations have recognized is that a lot of mothers are making healthcare decisions for the families, meaning we're going to choose this healthcare organization for the birth process and then stay with that healthcare organization. So throughout their care. So until baby becomes an adult. And so that's an opportunity for the organization to get more people, right, into getting care there. So you want that experience to be a positive one.
Jane, I want to ask you a question along these same lines. We're talking about some of these different influences. How do different owner/stakeholder perspectives influence design decisions?
It's a great question, because they're are a lot of different perspectives and opinions, right, when it comes to design, things like that. It's just a balancing act because each person has a different view of the space and how that space would be used and how they need to use the space. But they all need to kind of balance, and we need to, as designers, take into consideration all of those different perspectives and come to the best solution that's going to meet all the needs of everyone using the space. The patient, as Wendy mentioned, wants to be comfortable in the space and they want some control over their space. So whether that's the lighting or being able to play their own music or change the temperature, things like that. And it's important for them to be comfortable. Also important for them to know that their families are included in the space. Clinicians just want a safe and efficient space to provide the care that they need. They need the medical tools, equipment, and everything right there at their fingertips to be able to provide that care, especially in emergent situations for something that's not necessarily part of the birth plan, but be able to switch gears if needed and have those tools there for them to do so. Owners are always looking at it from, for the most part, how can we satisfy the patients, but also what's going to be the most cost effective. So there's always that budget piece that comes into play that we have to be mindful of and just be good stewards of our clients' funds and provide them, you know, with the most efficient, but also in a maintenance perspective, financial perspective, and all those. We all want equitable care provided for everyone. And so how do we do that when we're looking at there's codes and regulations that we have to comply with, but then there's also, as we talked earlier, the cultural aspects of different groups that live within our communities, providing the right privacy for them or just respecting their different cultural needs. And whether that be emotional needs or physical needs, we just need to be respectful and provide the safest, the dignity and the care that is delivered for every one of them. As architects, we always just want to provide the best place that we can, beautiful and healthy, healing spaces that are functional. But we do need to take into consideration all of these different stakeholder opinions. Really, there's going to be conflict with some of these. We look at different aspects, different products, different things that can be provided within the space. Right. You know, looking at the cost of one versus another, we can still provide the same comfortable space and maybe at a little lesser cost. Looking at the financial aspect of those things, we have to juggle all of those pieces and parts and ultimately come up to this beautiful solution that will become a comfortable place for patients, but also the working environment for the staff.
So maybe just looking at this from an overarching perspective, how do we incorporate care from prenatal to post-delivery specifically?
Well, I think, Brian, it's important because prenatal, you get connected with a clinic and we try to think about the whole experience. So making them familiar with the clinic, being adjacent to the facilities where they'll be delivering. So it helps that whole continuum of care, them feeling more comfortable with their providers and with the facility. So when that stressful time of delivery comes up, or maybe they're not feeling well, there's less anxiety coming into the facility at that time.
And understanding that the relationship of the pieces along the journey is part of the overall branded experience for the healthcare system and the providers.
Yeah. And some of those pieces may include, like, throughout the care, for some high-risk pregnancies, moms may need to be in the hospital, whether it be on bed rest prior to delivery. So some facilities have included some patient rooms specifically for moms that may need to be there. And also included amenities such as, you know, a family room or spaces where they can mingle with other moms that may be up there, just in a more social gathering, since they're not necessarily sick patients, but they can be out and about and talking to other people on the unit. In delivery units, we've included a fetal surgery OR, which allows doctors to actually perform surgery on a fetus while they're still in the mother's womb, which to me is just mind-boggling that people are able to do this. And we have such fantastic doctors that know how to help the fetus before they are born and potentially, hopefully, come to a healthier outcome when delivery does happen. To be able to do that is just incredible to me. But the fact that we can provide those spaces to care for those unborn babies before they're born, and some of these procedures are just unbelievable. We also provide the typical C-section rooms, but I will say I worked with a fantastic women and children's facility consultant on a few projects in the past, and she was just phenomenal. But one of the comments she made one time, we often see in our space program, we have C-section rooms and there's how many in size and such. And she said, I don't know why we call them C-section. I know that's the procedure, but there's a birth that happens in every room. And so our rooms were always labeled C-birth ORs. And that's just always stuck with me, because no matter how a baby is delivered, it is a birth and it's something to be celebrated in whichever room you're in.
Christy, how do we create spaces that support the birth experience while accommodating those medical interventions that might come up?
I generally like to conceal technology and equipment. So having, in some instances, you can provide an alcove or you can provide an equipment room that will keep everything necessary in the room, but not on display. So it's not intimidating. It doesn't influence the entire process. Doing that, and then also making sure when we lay out the department that the path of travel from a labor and delivery room to the C-section room or from triage to the labor and delivery room, all of those paths are as short as possible, as simple as possible, and you don't have a lot of crossover traffic. It's really important, the speed from a labor and delivery room, if something does happen, you have to get into that C-section room quickly to make sure that you're not putting anything in the way and you're not making decisions that can jeopardize a patient later on. And then also making sure that our technology team is working with the hospital and understanding what type of monitoring they're doing. Are they using wireless monitoring? What are we doing in the environment that can help that or make that harder? It's just a lot of asking questions, which I've been really good at since birth. I came out asking a lot of questions. Suits me well now.
I think we've talked about the birthing experience. If there is a loss, you have to think about you can help that patient and their family in that room as well. And so thinking about some access to whether it be a bereavement space or other services that they'll provide for the family if there is a loss, to not forget that as well.
So how does family inclusion play into the birth process, play into design?
We have to be really careful in these environments to make sure that we keep the staff as efficient and functional as possible. We give the patient room, but we also encourage the family to be there and give them a place to belong. That isn't just giving them a chair on the other side of the bed next to the window. It's really thinking about, like Wendy was saying, she labored for 24 hours with her first child. Understanding that, it's important for that partner, care provider, whoever that person is that needs to be in the room with that laboring mom, understanding that they need to be comfortable to be there. And so looking at the proportions of the room, looking even at the furniture selection that we put in there, accommodates somebody that might be really tall. Or somebody that may be not so tall, but making sure that the solutions we put in there really give them a place to belong where they can be comfortable and stay.
Good.
And I think in addition to that, that person also is going to need to eat, right? And they are going to need to move and get out of that environment and have a different look every once in a while. So just looking at the other amenities that are provided, whether it be a family waiting room, if there's snacks there, or there's other amenities within the facility, or they can go and get food, drink, whatever they need, just to step away for a few minutes and just clear their heads, come back, deal with whatever they're needing to deal with. But we also have potentially if they need to go to the operating room, like different facilities for them to be able to change into their scrubs and kind of get them prepared for what is about to happen next as well. And just those extra spaces that we may need to accommodate the family.
And I think the other thing I would add is the thinking about the safety and security. I know we've touched on it a bit. The CDC reports that just over 5% of pregnant women, unfortunately, are the victim of interpersonal violence, and whether that's during prenatal or post-delivery. So when we're thinking about the unit as a whole, you want to make sure that you're working with your client to have a screening process, whether that's at the front doors or at the unit, for those that come in, and thinking about those safety and security touch points where those doors can be locked down and what have you, to make sure that everybody's safe during that time.
That's a really great point. So the next thing I wanted to kind of circle back to was talking about the different birth plans. We always did a traditional route, but I've heard a lot more people doing like bathtubs and things of that nature. So how do you provide flexibility for these different birth plans and some of the emergency scenarios that we talk about?
I think it's one of the first conversations that we need to have when we start a project is talk to the clinicians, the leadership team. What are you being asked to provide? What are you comfortable providing? What can we provide evidence or research to help you along your decision-making process? So some of the simple things to provide are, like I talked about earlier, equipment rooms that can house yoga balls and that can house stools for vertical deliveries. Also making sure that we're looking beyond that at the controllable lighting and the controls inside the room, which Jane talked about earlier. Furniture that can be used for skin-to-skin contact with the babies in the room. So making sure that the space can accommodate the flexibility of furniture as well. And then one of the biggest conversations I think we usually have is to or not to provide a bathtub in the rooms. And there's been a lot of projects I've gone in and installed them, and then infection control findings, we go back and we take them out, and then we go back in 5 years and put them in. And so really sitting beside the client, providing all of that research from our wonderful director of research, and really helping the facility make the decisions that are right for them and right for what they're hearing from their patients. That's the biggest part of really what should be our kickoff meetings.
In a lot of facilities, we've had the opportunity to actually mock up some of the rooms to be able to run through some of these scenarios that may happen, whether it be just the typical normal delivery or in an emergent case, what would they do? What equipment is needed? How are the physicians, medical staff moving around in the room? And then also, like, especially in a labor and delivery room, we provide space for mom as well as baby to be cared for in the same room. So what is the best setup? And you also not necessarily just thinking about staff and not wanting those teams to be in each other's ways, but also where are mom's eyes? When baby is born, can mom see the baby? Like, what's the best setup for them? Because that's the most important thing, really, is that connection. She needs to know that my baby is okay because it's no longer with me. So right. Just having those spaces and the dedicated areas and everyone being able to do their jobs at once, but keeping that connection with mom and baby is also important.
So then, Wendy, from an operations standpoint, how do you design support staffing workflows and clinical teams?
So you work with a client, you sit alongside with them, but I think it's really important to look at those support spaces and the needs that they have, meaning, you know, that emergency equipment, you don't need 10 emergency carts necessarily. You need to know where they are in a designated spot that is easy to recognize if you're in an emergent situation. I think you really need to work with them on their walking distances and connection to those spaces, their adjacencies, to understand how that patient is going to flow if there is an emergent situation to those C-section rooms, or how baby is going to get to the NICU or the nursery or, you know, wherever their next step is, looking at those adjacencies of those other departments as well.
So I don't know about any of you, but the first night I feel like is you want that privacy, you're enjoying your new child. And then inevitably with our kids, somebody would have a breathing issue. They had gotten fluid and they needed it sucked out. So you kind of want the privacy, but you're also like, no, wait a minute, get in here. We need your help. So how do you guys work through finding this balance between privacy and necessary monitoring supervision?
There are clinical standards that they're required to be at bedside to do that, but it is a balance of how many times you come into that room to check on somebody, right? To make sure they're okay. I think you have to understand with your patient kind of their level of anxiety or comfort, and making sure that you're addressing any needs when you, as a clinician, walk into that room so they feel supported. And then also explaining to them, here's the call light and other things. If you do have a question, then this is how to get a hold of us. And it's also the responsibility of the clinician to understand how they're continuing to monitor things too. So if they hear a bell go off, or, you know, how they're going to respond to that. Labor and delivery, I think nursing, it's a lot of communication to help with that care and relieve some of that anxiety.
For me, I think the distance from the care station and nurse station, we typically called it a nurse station. Now they're more care team stations because they're interdisciplinary. But looking at the distance from where the staff belong to where the patient door is and where the patient rooms are, and making sure that we are making decisions based on keeping those distances as short as possible. It's a perception, but it's also a reality that the closer that the staff are, the fewer steps they have to take to reach essential supplies, the more time they have to spend at the patient bed. Also look at the orientation of the bed and the location of the door relative to that patient bed. I had three children, two of them were twins, and that was an incredibly hard thing when you're learning how to nurse twins for the first time. And every time I finally thought I had it figured out, somebody was coming in and out of the door. So right. Even thinking about the shape of the room, that door, and laying out all of those moments that are important for the mom, but making sure that you're taking into consideration the ability for the staff to come in and see the patient and get to the patient with speed. It's important. Okay.
I think in any scenario, communication is key. So there's lots of ways to communicate and tell someone that you need help. But I think it's also just a one-on-one conversation to let, as the patient, let your nurse know what level of interaction do you want and do you need. And I know, especially with my first, I was so exhausted after that 24 hours that I said, yes, please take him to the nurse. Yes. You know, and that's not like usually we keep the babies in the rooms and such, but I was so tired. I just wanted a few hours of silence to sleep. Right. And that's okay. But you have to communicate. And it's just the key part of anything that you go through. Also on the architectural side, just in terms of privacy and how we actually like build that built environment, there's specific products that we can specify or wall construction that we can design to help with the acoustics of the room, especially in labor and delivery rooms when they're side by side, just being that acoustical partition in between the two of them and addressing the ceiling types that we have in there and the privacy from the corridors and such. The doors are always in the place where sound or light is going to transfer through, right? So just looking at construction of the room itself and what we use is just important as well for the privacy of not just the patient, but the whole unit in terms of everything that's going on at once.
You three are some of our experts and you come from different backgrounds. So how do you manage competing priorities between the clinical side, the architectural side, and then the planning perspective?
So I really think this is where our approach to design is most beneficial for our teams and for the client and just for the overall success of our projects. I love having operational planners and designers and everyone right up at the table at once. We're all in this together from the very beginning because we can understand the perspective that each one of us holds from the owner and this project and what it is we're trying to accomplish for them and really see and understand all of those different viewpoints to then come together to collaborate and create a more successful project by being able to understand all of those different things and not me just understanding, well, the wall type needs to be this or the ceiling needs to be that, but really understanding the flow of the overall department, what's best for the patient, what's best for the staff, the adjacencies of all of those pieces and parts and putting them together. And then also looking at size and scale and all the components and pieces that we need to accommodate within rooms. But just from the very beginning, it just, in my opinion, makes for a much more successful project when we have all the right voices and team members at the table from the start.
I like to ask in a kickoff meeting what success looks like and get the client to define what their goals and priorities are. Then we use that to develop a scorecard that will lead to decision making. So develop the scorecard so that you, when you have difficulty with alignment, you can fall back and say, well, we heard this, you prioritized this, how do we meet in the middle, or how do we approach this situation to achieve what you have stated as your end game or your end goal. We also have different tools. A lot of times we will provide options based on things that we're hearing and then give them plus deltas. Or we can do a choosing by advantage exercise to really help understand what the root cause is, why are we having trouble making the decision, what are we trying to achieve, and then really kind of nail down objectively to what the best direction to proceed with is.
One of the things that I want to add is we haven't really talked about, we've talked about support staff spaces, but not the respite spaces. So in the planning process, I think it's really important to understand where the client is today. And I think, Christy, your question is, it should be asked of every client, what's your definition of success for this project? So where they are today and where they want to go. Because sometimes it's our responsibility, our team can push them outside of where they are to providing maybe a more flexible platform, or more efficient, or making some changes in what they do now to move into the future of the care and, you know, in the building they want to went to last for 15, 20, 75 years.
Right.
So it's our responsibility as a team too of experts to be able to bring to them what we've seen in the industry, what we've done in the industry. Again, that research piece, all of those pieces fitting together, present that to the client so they're in the best position during the design process. But I think too, as a previous clinician, I like to walk alongside our team and bridge between the clinicians. So sometimes we think about not only those care spaces, but about the staff spaces as well, and make sure that there's adequate respite space for those staff. Jane talked a little bit earlier about those patients that maybe are on bed rest. Mm-hmm. Some patients might spend a month in the hospital. And when you have a patient like that, they become family to the clinicians. And so if there is a loss or if there is an unexpected outcome, allowing that staff to have an opportunity to grieve or a private space is important as well.
As we wrap things up here, what do you all wish more clients understood about these spaces? Or what is a must-have element in your mind when designing for women and children?
This is not a one-size-fits-all approach for everyone, right? Every birthing experience is different. Some people may have a very specific birthing plan that they come in with, and others may not really have thought about it at all. There's just such a wide range of what can happen during that birthing experience. And so I think owners need to know that it's not necessarily room from a patient perspective, although it may be from a clinical perspective. And there is efficiencies in providing them all designed similarly so that the staff know where to find things when they go in and they're all the same. But from a patient perspective, there needs to be flexibility and really providing what they need, the comfort in that environment. Some people want to come in and they have pictures that they want to put up because it makes them feel like home, or pictures of family members that can't be there with them. So you have to be able to accommodate whatever it is that a patient brings and be flexible in that environment and provide the control that they need to make the space as comfortable as they can.
What first came to my mind was security, but it's not just physical security. It's easy to focus on physical security and, you know, what's the infant tracking system that the facility uses. But it's also that emotional well-being and the emotional security. And we've talked a little bit about that with the way that patients are screened coming in to make sure that if they are victims, that's understood. We also look at what happens in all scenarios of the experience. So Wendy, you've talked a little bit about when things don't go quite as planned, or when there is a demise, making sure that as the design team, we walk with the care providers through what happens if it goes well, what happens if it doesn't go well, and provide that physical well-being and security for all scenarios possible.
Well, as I imagined, I learned a ton on this. I'm so thankful for the three of you and joining me on this episode. So thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank Jane, Wendy, and Christy again for joining me on this episode of BSA by Design. You can connect with them each on LinkedIn. If you want to learn more about BSA, we encourage you to visit our website at bsadesign.com. There's a link in the show notes to contact us for more information. And be sure to subscribe to BSA by Design on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube Music so you don't miss an episode. And be sure to check out BSA on social media, including LinkedIn and YouTube. We've got a lot of great content there. That's going to do it for this episode. Join us again next time on BSA by Design.